Madness is in the eye of the beholder. Having done exhaustive research on sociopathic behavior for a 2-hour NBC dramatic special recently, I won't give you the faintest murmur of an objection that there are freaks and wackos walking the streets. They're as liable to shoot you dead for chuckles as they are to assist you in getting your stalled car moving out of the intersection. One reliable estimate of the number of potential psychomotor epileptics undetected in our midst is 250,000 in the United States alone. And if you've read Michael Crichton's The Terminal Man, you know that the, quote, brainstorm, unquote, caused by psychomotor epilepsy can turn a normal human being into a psychopathic killer in moments. No, I won't argue. There are mad folk among us. But the madness of which I speak is what the late George Apley might have called eccentricity, the behavioral pattern outside the accepted norm, whatever the hell that might be. The little old man sitting on the park bench having an animated conversation with himself. The girl who likes to dress as an exact replica of Betty Boop. The young guy out on the sidewalk playing an ocarina and interspersing his recital with denunciations of the city power and water authority. The old lady who dies in her 2-room flat and the cops find 60 years worth of old newspapers plus $200,000 in a cigar box. One of the wooden ones. The old ones you simply can't find anymore because they don't make them. They're great for storing old photos and comic character buttons. If you have one you don't want, send it along to me, will you? The staid businessman who gets off by wearing his wife's pantyhose. The little kid who puts a big S on a bath towel and shouting, "Up, up and away," jumps off the garage roof. They're not nuts, friends. They're simply seeing it all through different eyes. They have imagination, and they know something about being alone and in pain. They're altering the real world to fit their fantasies. That's okay. We all do it. Don't say you don't. How many of you have come out of the movie, having seen Bullet or The French Connection or Vanishing Point or The Last American Hero or Freebie and the Bean, gotten in your car and just about done a wheelie 65 miles per hour out of the parking lot? Don't lie to me, gentle reader. We all have weird-looking mannerisms that seem perfectly rational to us, but make onlookers cock an eyebrow and cross to the other side of the street. I've grown very fond of people who can let it out, who can have the strength of compulsion to indulge their special affectations. They seem to me more real than the faceless gray hordes of sidewalk sliders who go from there to here without so much as a hop, skip, or a jump. One morning in New York last year, I was having a drugstore breakfast with Nancy Weber, who wrote The Life Swap. We were sitting up at the counter on revolving stools, chewing down greasy eggs and salty bacon, talking about how many dryads can live in a banyan tree, when the front door of the drugstore, the now raised, much lamented, lovely Henry Halper's on the corner of 56th and Madison, torn down to build, I suppose, an aesthetically enchanting parking structure or candidate for a towering inferno, opened, and in stormed a little old man in an overcoat much too heavy for the weather. He boiled in like a monsoon, stood in the middle of the room, and began to pillory Nixon and his resident offensive line of thugs for double-teaming democracy. He was brilliant, never repeated himself once, and this was long before the crash of Nixon off his pedestal. Top of his lungs, flamboyant rhetoric. Utter honesty, no Mickey Mouse, corruption and evil, a flower in the land of the free. On and on he went as everyone stared dumbfounded. And then, without even a bow to the box seats, out he went. A breath of fresh air in a muggy world. I sat there with a grin on my face only a tape measure could have recorded. I applauded, super duper. Nancy dug it, I dug it. And a bespectacled gentleman 3 down from us, burnt toast ignored, dug it. The rest of the people vacillated between outrage and confusion, finally settling on attitudes best described by a circling finger toward the right ear. They thought he was bananas. Well, maybe, but what a swell madness. Or take my bed, for instance. When you come into my bedroom, you see the bed up on a square box platform covered with deep pile carpeting. It's in bright colors because I like bright colors. Now, there's a very good, solid, rational reason why the bed is up there like that. Someday, I'll tell you why. It's a personal reason, in the nature of killing evil shadows. But that isn't important right here. What is important is the attitude of people who see that bed for the first time. Some snicker and call it an altar. Others frown with disapproval and call it a pedestal or a Playboy bed. It's none of those. It's very functional and serves an emotional purpose that is none of their business. But Lord, how quick they are to label it the way they see it and to lay their value judgment on it and me. Most of the time, I don't bother explaining. It isn't worth it. But it happens all the time. And every time it happens, I think about this story. Madness is in the eye of the beholder. What seems cuckoo to you may be rigorously logical to someone else. Remember that as you read The Crackpots. He was standing on a street corner, wearing a long orange nightgown and a red slumber cap with a tassel. He was studiously picking his nose. "Watch him," cried Firth. "Watch what he does. Get the technique accurately." "For this I studied 4 years to become an expert?" thought Themis. Firth looked at the younger man for the first time in several minutes. "Are you watching him?" The elder watcher nudged his companion, causing Themis's dicto box to bump unceremoniously against his chest. "Yes, yes, I'm watching," answered Themis. "But what possible reason could there be to watch a lunatic picking his nose on a public street corner?" Annoyance rang in his voice. Firth swung on him, his eyes cold steel. "You watch them. That's your job, and don't forget that, and dictate it into that box strapped to your stupid shoulders. If I ever catch you failing to notice and dictate what they're doing, I'll have you shipped back to Central and then into the mines. You understand what I'm saying?" Themis nodded dumbly, the attack having shocked and surprised him. So sudden and intensive was it. He watched the crackpot. His stomach felt uneasy. His voice quavered as he described in minute detail, as he had been taught, the procedure. It made his nose itch. He ignored it. Soon, the crackpot gave a little laugh, did a small dance step, and skipped out of sight across the street and around the corner. Themis spoke into the communicator attachment on his box. "Watcher, Sector 70 here, male, orange nightgown, red slumber cap coming your way. Pick him up, 69, he's all yours, over." An acknowledging buzz came from the attachment, Themis said. "Out here," and turned the attachment off. Firth, who had been dictating the detailed tying of a can on the tail of a four-legged Kyban dog by a tall, bald crackpot, concluded his report as the dog ran off, barking wildly, muttered, "Off," into the dicto box and turned once more to Themis. The younger watcher tightened inside. "Here it comes." Unexpectedly, the senior watcher's voice was quiet, almost gentle. "Come with me, Themis. I want to talk with you." They strode through the street of Valassa, capital of Kaiba, watching the other branch of Kyban. The native Kyban, those who put light tubes in their mouths and twisted their ears in expectation of fluorescence, those who pulled their teeth with adjusto wrenches, those who sat and scribbled odd messages on the sidewalks, called the armor-dressed Kyban stuffed shirts. The governing Kyban those with the armor and high-crested metal helmets bearing the proud emblem of the eye and eagle, called their charges crackpots. They were both Kyban. There was a vast difference. Firth was about to delineate the difference to his new aide. The senior watcher's great cape swirled in a rain of black as he turned into the pub crawler. At a table near the front, Firth pulled his cape about his thighs and sat down, motioning Themis to the other chair. The waiter walked slowly over to them, yawning behind his hand. Firth dictated the fact briefly. The waiter gave a high-pitched, maniacal laugh. Themis felt his blood chill. These people were all mad, absolutely mad. 2 glasses of Greth, Firth said. The waiter left. Firth recorded the fact. The waiter had kicked him before he had gone behind the bar. When the drinks arrived, Firth took a long pull from the helix-shaped glass, slumped back, folded his hands on the table, and said, "What did you learn at Academy Central?" The question took Themis by surprise. What do you mean? I learned a great many things. Such as? Tell me. Well, there was primary snooping, both conscious and subconscious evaluation, reportage for 4 years of it, shorthand, applied dictology, history, manners, customs, authority evaluation, mechanics, fact assemblage. He found the subjects leaping to the front of his mind, tumbling from his lips. He had been second in his class of 1200, and it had all stuck. Firth cut him off with a wave of his hand. "Let's take that history. Capsule it for me." Firth was a big man, eyes oddly set far back in hollows above deep yellow cheeks, hair white about the temples, a lean and electric man, the type who radiates energy even when asleep. Themis suspected this was his superior's way of testing him. He recited, "The core is dedicated to gathering data. It will watch and detect, assimilate and file. Nothing will escape the gaze of the watcher. As the eagle soars, so the eye of the watcher will fly to all things." "God, no, man. I mean the history. The history." The elder watcher precision tapped his fingers one after another in irritation. "What is the story of the Kyban, of Kaiba itself, of your job here? What is our relation to these?" He waved his hand, taking in the bar, the people in the streets, the entire planet, and its twin suns blazing yellow in the afternoon sky. Themis licked his thin lips. "The Kyban rule the galaxy. Is that what you want?" He breathed easier as the older man nodded. He continued by rote. "The Kyban rule the galaxy. They are the organizers. All other races realize the superior reasoning and administrative powers of the Kyban, and thus allow the Kyban to rule the galaxy." He stopped, biting his lower lip. "With your permission, Superior, can I do this some other way? Back at Academy Central, memorization was required. Even on Panaris, it seemed apropos, but somehow, here, it seems foolish to me. No disrespect intended, you understand. I'd just like to ramble it off quickly. I gather all you want are the basics." The older man nodded his head for Themis to continue in any fashion he chose. "We are a power, and all the others are too scared of us to try usurping because we run it all better than any 10 of them could, and the only trouble is with the Earthmen and the Mawson Confederation with whom we are negotiating right now. The only thing we have against us is this planet of black sheep relatives. They happen to be our people, but we left them some 1,100 years ago because they were a pain in the neck, and the Kyban realized they had a universe to conquer, and we wish we could get rid of them because they're all quite mad, and if anyone finds out about them, we'll lose prestige, and besides, they're a nuisance." He found himself out of breath after the long string of phrases, and he stopped for a second. "There isn't a sane person on this planet, which isn't strange because all the 4Fs were left when our ancestors took to space. In the 1,100 years we've been running the galaxy, these crackpots have created a culture of imbecility for themselves. The Watcher garrison is maintained to make sure the lunatics don't escape and damage our position with the other worlds around us. If you have a black sheep relative, either you put him away under surveillance so he can't bother you, or you have him exterminated. Since we aren't barbarians like the Earthmen, we keep the madmen here and watch them full time. He stopped, realizing he had covered the subject quite well, and because he saw the sour expression on Firth's face. "That's what they taught you at Academy Central?" asked the senior watcher. "That's about it, except that watcher units are all over the galaxy, from Panaris to Kaiba, from the home planet to our farthest holding, doing a job for which they were trained and which no other order could do, performing an invaluable service to all Kaiban, from Kaiban Central outward to the edges of our exploration." "Then don't you ever forget it. Hear?" snapped Firth, leaning quickly across to the younger man. "Don't you ever let it slip out of your mind. If anything happens while you're awake and on the scene and you miss it, no matter how insignificant, you'll wind up in the mines." As if to illustrate his point, he clicked the dicto box to on and spoke briefly into it, keeping his eyes on a girl neatly pouring the contents of a row of glasses on the bar's floor and eating the glasses, all but the stems, which she left lying in an orderly pile. He concluded and leaned back toward Themis, pointing a stubby finger. "You've got a soft job here, boy. 10 years as a watcher, and you can retire back to a nice, cozy apartment in a project at Kaiban Central or any other planet you choose, with anyone you choose, doing anything you choose, within the bounds of the Covenant, of course. You're lucky you made it into the Corps. Many a mother's son would give his mother to be where you are." He lifted his helix glass to his lips and drained it. Themis sat, scratched his nose, and watched the purple liquid disappear. It was his first day on Kaiba. His superior had straightened him out. He knew his place. He knew his job. Everything was clean and top-notch. Somehow, he was miserable. Themis looked at himself. At himself as he knew he was, not as he thought he was. This was a time for realities, not for wishful thinking. He was 23, average height, blue hair, blue eyes, light complexion, just a bit lighter than the average gold color of his people, superior intelligence, and with the rigid, logical mind of his kind. He was an accepted underclass member of the Watcher Corps, with a year of intern work at Panaris Base, and an immediate promotion to Kaiba, which was acknowledged the soft spot before retirement. For a man as new to the Corps as Themis's 5 years made him, this was a remarkable thing, and explainable only by his quick and brilliant dictographic background. He was a free man, a quick man with a dicto box, a good-looking man, and, unfortunately, an unhappy man. He was confused by it all. His summation of himself was suddenly shattered by the rest of his squad's entrance into the common room, voices pitched on a dozen different levels. They came through the sliding doors, jostling and joking with one another, all tall and straight, all handsome and intelligent.
"You should have seen the one I got yesterday," said one man, zipping up his chest armor. "He was sitting in the Dog's Skull, you know, that little place on the corner of Bremen and Gabbert, with a bowl of noodle soup in front of him, tying the things together." The rest of the speaker's small group laughed uproariously. "When I asked him what he was doing, he said, 'I'm a noodle knitter, stupid.' He called me stupid, a noodle knitter."
He elbowed the underclassman next to him in the ribs, and they both roared with laughter. Across the room, strapping his dicto box to his chest, one of the elder underclassmen was studiously holding court.
"The worst ones are the psychos, gentlemen. I assure you, from 6 years' service here, that they take every prize ever invented. They are destructive, confusing, and elaborate to record. I recall one who was stacking juba fruits in a huge pyramid in front of the library on Hemmerth Court. I watched him for 7 hours. Then suddenly he leaped up, bellowing, kicking the whole thing over, threw himself through a shop front, attacked a woman shopping in the store, and finally
came to rest exhausted in the gutter. It was a 28-minute record, and I assure you, it stretched my ability to quick dictate. If he had... Themis lost the train of the fellow's description. The talks were going on all over the common room as the squad prepared to go out. His was one of 300 such squads, all over the city, shifted every 4 hours of the 32-hour day, so there was no section of the city left untended. Few, if any, things escaped the notice of the Watcher Corps. He pulled on his soft-soled jump boots, buckled his dicto box about him, and moved into the briefing room for instructions. The rows of seats were fast filling up, and Themis hurried down the aisle. Firth, dressed in an off-duty suit of plastic body armor with elaborate scrollwork embossed on it and the traditional black great cape, was seated with legs neatly crossed at the front of the room on a slightly raised podium. Themis took a seat next to the watcher named Elix, one who had been chortling over an escapade with a pretty female crackpot. Themis found himself looking at the other as though he were a mirror image. Odd how so many of us look alike, he thought. Then he caught himself. It was a ridiculous thought, and an incorrect one, of course. It was not that they looked alike, it was merely that the Kyben had found for themselves a central line, a median to which they conformed. It was so much more logical and rewarding that way. If your brother looks and acts as you do, you can predict him. If you can predict him, efficiency will follow. Only these crackpots defied prediction. Madman.
There are two current items on our order of business today, gentlemen, Firth announced, rising.
Notepads and styli appeared, as though by magic, but Firth shook his head and indicated they were not needed.
No, these aren't memoranda, gentlemen. The first is a problem of discipline. The second is an alert.
There was a restless murmur in the room, and Themis glanced around to see uneasiness on many faces. What could it be?
The problem of discipline is simply, he pointed at Elix, seated beside Themis. Such of your underclassmen as Watcher Elix.
Elix rose to attention.
Pack your gear, Watcher Elix. You leave for Kyben Central this afternoon.
Themis noted with fascination that the Watcher's face turned a shade paler.
May I ask why, Superior Firth?
Elix gasped out, maintaining core protocol even through his panic.
Yes, of course, replied Firth in a casual, matter-of-fact manner. You were on the scene of an orgy in the Hagar's building yesterday during second shift, were you not?
Elix swallowed with difficulty and nodded yes, then catching himself, he said,
Yes, Superior Firth.
How much of that orgy did you record?
As much as I could before it broke up, sir.
What you mean is as much as you could before you found that fondling a young woman named Gusby was more interesting than your on-duty job, correct?
She just talked to me for a short time, Superior. I recorded the entire affair. It was
out.
Firth pointed toward the door to the common room. Elix slumped visibly, turned out of the row, walked up the aisle, and out of the briefing room.
And let that be an indication, gentlemen, that we will tolerate no activities with these people, be they Kyben or not. We are here to watch, and there are enough female watchers and central personnel so that any desires that may be aroused in you may be quenched without recourse to our wards. Is that quite clear, gentlemen?
He did not wait for an answer. They knew it was clear, and he knew it was clear. The message had been transmitted in the most readily understood manner.
Now, to the other business at hand, continued Firth. We are currently looking for a man named Bulbeck, who we are told pinches steel. I have no explanation of this description, gentlemen, merely that he pinches steel. I can tell you that he has a big, bushy white beard, what they call twinkling eyes, a puffy-cheeked face, and a scar across his forehead from temple to temple. He weighs something between 190 and 200 pounds, fat and short,
and always dresses in a red jacket and knickers with white fur on them. If you see this man, you are to follow him, dictograph him completely, completely, do you understand? And not lose sight of him unless you are relieved by at least 10 other watchers. Is that clear? Again, he did not wait for an answer, but snapped his fingers casually, indicating the daily briefing was over. Themis rose with the other 38 watchers and began to leave the room. There was a uniform look on all their faces. They all had the picture of Elix behind their eyes. Themis began to edge out of his row. He started when Firth called to him.
Oh, Watcher Themis, I'd like a word with you.
Firth was a strange man in many ways. He did not fit Themis's picture of a superior from previous experience with them, and still bewildered by the abrupt fate assigned Elix, he found himself looking on his superior with a mixture of awe, incredulity, hatred, and fear.
I hope the little lesson you saw today will not upset you. It was a harsh measure, to be sure, but it was the only way to get the point across.
Themis knew precisely what the superior watcher meant, for he had been taught from youth that this was the way matters should be handled. He also knew what he felt, but he was Kyben, and Kyben know their place. Firth looked at him for a long moment, then pulled the black sheen that was his cloak closer about him.
I have you slated for big things here, Themis. We will have a post open for a new junior watcher in another 6 to 8 months, and your record indicates your strong possibility.
Themis was shocked at the familiarity in both conversation protocol and exposition of core business, but he kept the astonishment from showing on his face.
So I want you to keep an eye open here in Velasa, continued Firth. There are a number of, irregularities we want to put a stop to.
What sort of irregularities, Superior?
The Superior's familiarities had caused a corresponding ease to settle over the underclassmen. For one, this fraternization, strictly on an occupying troops level, to be sure, but still a deviation from the norm. And another is that we've had a number of men leave the Corps.
You mean sent home, or like Watcher Elix?
The Superior squirmed visibly.
Well, no, not exactly. What I mean is, they've, you might say, disappeared.
Themis's eyes opened wider in surprise.
Disappeared? That indicates free choice.
The roles of superior and underclassmen seemed for the moment to have been transposed as Firth tried to explain to the new watcher. They've just gone, that's all. We can't find any trace of them. We suspect the crackpots have been up to tricks more annoying than usual. He suddenly stopped, realizing he had lowered himself by explaining to a lesser, and drew himself erect.
But then, there's always been a certain percentage of loss here. Unusual, but not too unusual. This is a mad world, don't forget.
Themis nodded.
But then, to compensate, there are a certain number of crackpots who want to leave their insane people. Also, we take off a good 300 every year. People with the proper Kyben mind, the kind who can snap into a problem and solve it in no time. Good, logical thinkers. The administrative type, you know.
I see, sir, said Themis, not at all understanding. He was becoming more and more lost in trying to fathom his superior. The elder watcher seemed to sense a change in the underclassman's attitude, for once again he became brusque, realizing he had overstepped himself.
Well, accurate snooping to you. Good rounds.
Themis snapped a brisk salute at the superior and left quickly.
His beat that day was the 7th Sector, a 12-block coverage with 5 fellow watchers, their rounds overlapping. It was a route from the docks to the Minaret Village, from the stock pens near the Golwall Institute to the Pueblo City. Velasa, like all cities on Kaiba, was a wild melange of disorder. Airy, fragile towers of transparent plastic rose spiraling next to squat Quonset buildings. Teepees hunkered down next to buildings of multidimensional eccentricity whose arms twisted in on themselves till the eye lost the track of their form. Streets twisted and suddenly opened onto others. Many stopped dead as though their builders had tired of the effort of continuing. Large empty lots stood next to stores in which customers fought to get at the merchandise. The people strutted, capered, hobbled, marched, and walked backward on both hands and feet through the streets, in the stores, across the tops of 100 different styles of transportation. Themis snapped his dicto box on and spoke, "Record," into it. Then he walked slowly down one street, up the next, into an office building, through doors, past knots of people, dictating anything and everything. Occasionally, he would see a fellow watcher, and they would exchange salutes, eyes never leaving their wards. The crackpots seemed oblivious to his presence. No conversation would slow or halt at his approach. No one would move from his path. All seemed to accept him somehow. This bothered Themis. "Why aren't they angry at our eavesdropping?" he wondered. "Why do they tolerate us so? Is it fear of the Kyben might? But they are Kyben too. They call us stuffed shirts, but they're still Kyben. Or were once. What happened to the Kyben might that was born into each of them?" His thoughts were cut off by the sight of an old woman, skin almost yellow-white from age, rapidly wielding a three-pronged pickaxe at the cement of a gutter. He stopped, began dictating, and watched as she broke through the street, pulling out huge gouts of cement work and dirt from underneath. In a moment, she was down on hands and knees, feverishly digging with her gnarled old hands at the dirt. After 39 minutes, her hands were raw and bleeding. The hole wasn't quite 4 feet deep, and she kneeled in it, dirt arcing away into the air. The 50-minute mark brought her to a halt. She climbed laboriously out of the 6-foot hole, grabbed the pickaxe, and leaped back in. Themis moved nearer the edge. She was hacking away madly at a sewer pipe, some 3 feet thick. In a few moments, she had driven a gaping hole in the side of the pipe. She reached into her bodice and brought out a piece of what looked like dirty oilcloth, strung with wires. Themis was astounded to see both clear water and garbage running out of the pipe. Both were running together. No, they looked as though they were running together, but the flow of clean water came spurting out in one direction, while the muck and garbage sprayed forth from the opposite direction. They were running in opposite directions in the same pipe. She clamped the oilcloth onto the pipe, immediately stopping the escape of the water and refuse, and began filling the hole in. Themis watched her till the hole was neatly packed in, only slightly lower than the street level. She had thrown dirt haphazardly in all directions, and some of it was still evident on car tops and in doorways. His curiosity could be contained no longer. He walked over to the old woman who was slapping dirt off her polka-dotted dress. Blood from her raw hands spotted the garment. "Excuse me," he began. The old woman's expression subtly became, "Oh no, here they are again," as its message in life. "Garbage runs with the drinking water?" He asked the question tremulously, thinking of all the water he had drunk since his arrival, of the number of deaths from botulism and ptomaine poisoning, of the madness of these people. The old woman muttered something that sounded like, "Cretinous stuffed shirt," and began to pick up a bag of groceries, obviously dumped in a hurry before the excavating began. "Are there many deaths from this?" Themis asked, knowing it was a stupid question, knowing the figures must be staggering, wondering if he would be one of the statistics.
"Man, They don't even bother up and back to flow that way in negative polarization of the garbo. Let me away from this maniac.
And she stalked off, dirt dropping in small clots from her polka-dotted dress. He shook his head several times, trying to clear it, but the buzzing of his brain, trying to escape through his ears, prevented any comfort. He communicated her passage out of his sight through the communicator attachment, received the word she had been picked up by someone else, and started to make his rounds again. He stopped in mid-stride. It dawned on him suddenly. Why hadn't that bit of oilcloth been squirted out of the hole from the pressure in the pipe? What had held it on? He felt his tongue begin to swell in his mouth, and he realized it had all been deceiving. There had been wires attached to that scrap of oilcloth. They had served some purpose. Undoubtedly, that was it. Undoubtedly. His fine Kyban mind pushed the problem aside. He walked on, watching, recording, with a sudden headache. The afternoon netted a continuous running commentary on the ordinary mundane habits of the crackpots, biting each other on the left earlobe, which seemed to be a common activity, removing tires from land cars and replacing them with wadded-up articles of clothing, munching loaves of the spiral Kyban bread on the streets, poking long sticks through a many-holed board, to no visible purpose, and several items that Themis considered offbeat, even for these warped members of his race. Item: a young man leaped from the 17th story of an office building, plummeted to the third, landed on an awning, and after bouncing 6 times, lowered himself off the canvas, through the window, into the arms of an attractive blonde girl holding a stenographic pad, who immediately threw the pad away and began kissing him. He did not seem to be hurt by the fall or the abrupt landing. Themis wasn't sure whether they had been total strangers before the leap, but he did record a break in their amours when his audio pickup caught her panting, "What was the name?" Item: a blind beggar approached him on the street, crying for alms, and when he reached into a pocket to give the fellow a coin, the beggar drew himself taller than Themis had thought he could and spat directly onto Themis's jump boots. "Not that coin, you clod! Not that coin, the other one!" Themis was amazed, for he had but 2 coins in his pocket, and the one intended had been a silver half-kyle, and the one the beggar seemed to want was a copper narc. The beggar became indignant at the delay and hurried away, carefully sidestepping a group of men who came hurrying out of an alley. Item: Themis saw a woman in a televiz booth rapidly erasing the wall. Viz numbers left there by 100 occupants suddenly disappeared under the woman's active hands. When she had the walls completely bare, she reached into a bag at her feet and brought out a tube of spray paint. In a few minutes, the booth was repainted a cherry pink and was completely dry. Then she began writing new numbers in. After 1.25 hours, she left, and Themis did too. Item: a young woman lowered herself by the legs from the sign above a bar and grill, swinging directly into Themis's path. Even upside down, she looked good to Themis. She was wearing a pretty print dress and lavender lace undies. Themis averted his eyes and began to step around her. "Hello," she said. Themis stopped and found himself looking up at her, hanging by her knees from the wooden sign that said, "You can eat here, too." She was a beautiful girl, indeed. Bright blue hair, a fair golden complexion, high cheekbones, lovely legs, delightful. He drew himself to attention, turning his eyes slightly away from her. "Watcher Themis at your service, miss."
"I like you," she said.
Asked Themis, not quite believing he had heard her correctly.
"Do I stutter?"
"Oh, no, certainly not."
"Then you heard what I said?"
"Well, yes, I suppose I did."
"Then why ask me to repeat it?"
Because you just don't come down that way and tell someone you like them. It just isn't ladylike.
She did a double flip in the air and came down lightly on the balls of her feet directly in front of the watcher.
Oh, Swizzlegup! It's ladylike if I want to do it. If you can't tell I'm a lady just from looking at me, then I'd better find someone who can tell the difference between the sexes.
Themis found himself quite enthralled. Somehow, she was not like the rest of the mad inhabitants of this world. She talked logically, although a bit more forwardly than what he had become accustomed to, and she was certainly delightful to look at. He began to ask her name when a clear, bright picture of the damned Elix came to him. He turned to leave. She grabbed him roughly by the sleeve, her fingernails tinkling on his armor.
Wait a minute, where are you going? I'm not finished talking to you.
I can't talk to you. The superior doesn't approve. He nervously ran a hand across the bridge of his nose while looking up and down the street for brother watchers.
Oh, Herbal Dews, him, she giggled. He doesn't like anything. That's his job. If you have a job to do, do it, you understand?
She mimicked Firth's voice faithfully, and Themis grinned in spite of himself. She seized on his gesture of pleasure and continued hurriedly.
I'm 19. My name is Darfla. What's yours, Themis?
I've got to go. I'll be sent to the mines. This isn't part of my job. I've got to watch. Don't you want to?
Oh, all right. If I make it part of your stupid stuffed shirt job, will you talk to me?
She drew him into a wide, shadowed doorway with much difficulty. Well, I don't know how you can make it a part of my... He looked about him in apprehension. Could he be court-martialed just for talking? Was he doomed already? She cut in.
You're looking for a man named Bulbak, aren't you?
How did you...
Yes, yes. Stop that.
I don't know how you found out, but yes, we are. Why?
Oddly, he found himself slipping into the running away speech of these people, and it was both pleasing and distressing. He was somehow afraid he might be going native. But in less than 2 days?
He's my uncle. Would you like to meet him?
Record.
Themis barked at his dicto box.
Ah, must you?
Darfla looked toward the twin sons and crossed her arms in exasperation. Themis's brow furrowed, and he reluctantly muttered, off into the box.
I'm a watcher, and that's what I'm supposed to do, watch. But if I don't record it all, then they can't send it to Kyben Central, and there won't be any tapes for me, and I'll get sent to the mines.
He stopped. Then added with a finger stiffly pointed between her eyebrows,
and that may not bother you, but I've seen reels of the mines, and crawling through a bore shaft not much wider than your body, dragging an ore sack tied to your leg, and the chance that sterility won't have time to hit before your face just ups and falls off, well, it sort of makes me worry.
He looked at her, surprised. She was tinkling. Her laughter was actually a tinkle, falling lightly from her and pleasantly tingling his ears.
What are you laughing at?
He frowned, trying to be angry, though her laughter made him feel lighter than he had since he'd hit this madball world.
Your face ups and falls off, she laughed again. That's the kind of thing you stuffed shirts would expect me to say. Beautiful. Yes, I'm sure I like you.
The underclass watcher was confused. He looked about in confusion, feeling distinctly as though he had come in during the middle of a conversation.
I'd better be going. I don't think I want to meet your... All right, all right. Suppose I fix your stupid box so it keeps right on recording things that are happening in your voice without your being here. Then would you leave it and come with me? Are you out of your mind? He yelled in a hushed tone.
Certainly, she said, smiling broadly. He turned once more to leave, angry and annoyed at her making fun of him. Again, she stopped him.
No, I'm sorry. Please, I can do it. Honestly, here, let me have it.
Look, I can't give you my dicto box. That's about the most terrible thing a watcher can do. They'd hang me, shoot me, starve me, kill me, then send the ashes of my cremated stump to our mines to be used for feeding the slave apes. Leave me alone! The last was a rising note, for the girl had lifted her skirt and drawn a curved knife from her garter belt and was determinedly prying off the top of the dicto box still attached to Themis's chest. The watcher fought down a mad impulse to ask her why she was wearing a garter belt when she wasn't wearing hose, and tried to stop her.
Wait, wait! They'll throw me out of the core. Stop! Here. Let go there. Wait a minute. I say wait a minute, for God's sake. If you won't stop, at least let me take it off so you don't slice my throat. Here.
He slipped the shoulder straps off and unbuckled the belt. The dicto box fell into the girl's hand, and she set to work fumbling about in the machine's intricate innards. Finally, she stood up, her feet lost in a pile of wire spools, vacuum tubes, metal separators, punch circuits, and plastic coils. The box looked empty inside, except for a strangely flotsam-like construction in one corner.
Look what you've done now.
Stop whining, man. It's all right. If it's all right, make it record and play back for me. He was terrified, indignant, furious, and interested all at once.
I can't.
What? Why should I? I'm crazy, remember? Themis felt his face turn to lava.
Damn you! Look what you've done to me.
In 5 minutes, you've taken me from my core and sentenced me to a life that may be no longer than all the brains you have stretched end to end.
Oh, stop being so melodramatic.
She was smiling, tinkling again.
Now you can come with me to meet my uncle.
There's no reason why you should stay here. There is a chance the box will play if you come back to it later, as I said it would, but even if it doesn't, staying here is no help since it isn't functioning. I'll get a mechanic to fix it, if that will make you any happier.
No crackpot mechanic can fix that, you fool. It's a masterpiece of Kyvan science. It took hundreds of men thousands of hours to arrive at this. Oh, what's the use?
He sat down in the doorway, head in his hands. Somehow, her logic was sound. If the box was broken, there was no reason for his refusing to go with her, for staying there could only bring him trouble sooner. It was sound, yes, but only sound on the muggy foundation of her ruining the machine in the first place. He was beginning to feel like a tompora snake, the kind that swallows its own tail. He didn't know which end was which.
Come with me.
Her voice had suddenly lost its youthful happiness. It was suddenly strong, commanding. He looked up.
Get on your feet.
He arose slowly.
Now, come with me. If you want to come back to your box, it will be here and it will work. Right now, it will do as well if you believe I'm mad and ruined your dicto box.
She jerked her head sharply toward the street.
Come on. Perhaps you can reinstate yourself by finding the man named Bulbak.
It was hopeless there among the remnants of the dicto box. There was a chance the girl wasn't as totally insane as she seemed, and she actually might be Bulbak's niece, and somehow, against all his better, stricter reasoning to the contrary, her logic was queerly sound, in a fugitive sort of way. He went with her, wondering if he was insane himself. Themis followed the girl through sections of the city Superior Firth had missed during his guided tour of inspection. They passed under a beautifully filigreed arch into a gardened street lined with monstrous blossoms growing to heights of 8 and 9 feet on either side of the road, casting twin shadows from the bright suns above. Once he stopped her in the shadows of a towering flower and asked,
"Why did you decide you wanted me to meet your uncle?"
"I've been watching you all day," she said simply, as if prepared to leave that as a total explanation.
"But why me?"
"I like you," she said,
as though being purposely repetitious to impress him. Themis distinctly got the idea she was treating him as she would a very young child.
"Oh, I see,"
he said, more baffled than before. They continued down the street, through an area covered by long, low structures that might have been factories were it not for the impossibly tall and spindly-looking towers that reared from the roof of each one. Themis shaded his eyes from the glare of the twin suns as he sought to glimpse what was at the top of each tower. He could see nothing.
"What are those?"
he asked. He was surprised to hear his own voice. It sounded like that of an inquisitive little boy.
"Quiet, you."
That was the last thing Darfla said, till they came out of nowhere and grabbed her and Themis. Before the Watcher knew what was happening, a horde, more men than he could count, had surrounded them. They were dressed in everything from loincloth and top hat to burnouse and riding boots. Darfla gave one sharp, tiny squeal and then let her hands fall limply to her sides.
"All right, you want your say, so say."
Anger and annoyance fluttered in her voice. A short, pock-faced man wearing a suit that appeared to be made from ropes of different colors stepped forward.
"We thought negative and wanted to talk on this at cave."
Themis listened with growing amazement. Not only did the man intersperse every few words with a metallic, unnerving tongue clacking, but he said the word cave with a low, mysterious, important tone, totally unlike the rest of his speech, which was quite flat and uninflected. Darfla raised her hands, palms upward, in resignation.
"What can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry?"
The man addressed as dear shook his head and said,
"We before talked, and him not now, never, never, never. Nothing to say against that, but he's deaf, but deaf a stuffed one, at least well now for a time. Cave."
Same clucking. Same cryptic tone when speaking of the cave. Themis began to worry in direct proportion to the number of surrounders.
"Let's go,"
Darfla said over her shoulder to Themis, not taking her eyes from Deer.
Where?
Trembled Themis.
"Cave. Where else?"
"Oh, nowhere, I guess." He tried to be lighthearted about it. Somehow, he failed miserably.